Welcome to Focus on Fuels, brought to you by StoneX. Your hosts are Trevor McClanahan, Risk Manager, and Alex Fodes, Director of Market Strategy from the StoneX Energy Desk. Alex and Trevor help fleet managers, fuel buyers, and energy procurement specialists gain control of fuel costs, boost margins, and keep their businesses competitive. Join them for another deep dive into the volatile energy markets.
Remember that the trading of derivatives such as futures, options, and over-the-counter products or swaps may not be suitable for all investors. Derivatives trading involves substantial risk of loss. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future results.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Focus on Fuels. I'm your host, Alex Otis, and I'm here with my colleague, Trevor McClanahan.
How's it going, Mike?
Pretty good, and how are your holidays, end of year? We're starting 2026 off fresh.
Yeah, it was good for me. It was. I'm kind of glad to get back to work, get back into the swing of things, and it gets old after a while doing that whole getting back in the routine of the daily life is nice. So I'm happy to be back.
Yeah. I kind of I had a little bit of a vacation of where everybody in my house was sick for about 2 weeks, so. I'm kind of getting back in the swing of things as well.
And sounds like a great vacation.
Yeah, exactly. So we're starting off 2026 with quite a bit of news. So since the last time you all joined us, there was a big change in Venezuela. So the U.S. Went into Venezuela and essentially arrested Nicolas Maduro, the then sitting president. And recently, the market's kind of been digesting this move. Delcy Rodriguez is the current president sitting in Venezuela, who was on the Maduro party line as well. But we're still kind of digesting what this all means to the oil market. Prior to that, the U.S. had an embargo on Venezuela. And we recently looked at crude exports out of Venezuela and how they had kind of been disrupted. So there had been a drop of around 300,000 barrels per day from November to December due to that embargo. So I think primarily one of the big changes just in the very, very short term is that these ships are going to be able to load up and flow a little bit easier than before. So we could see an additional couple hundred thousand barrels per day of Venezuelan supply. But in the grand scheme of things, that really doesn't move the needle.
Going to the U.S., correct? Because what the new policy is that all those barrels are going to the U.S., correct?
I think if we're going to see how that unfolds, yeah. Because whether all of the Gulf Coast refiners are actually equipped to refine all that heavier crude is one thing. We have seen sour and heavier crudes hit some of their lowest differentials. So if you look at WCS, it was, I believe, at its lowest on the year now in 2026, but it has softened quite a bit, and then you're seeing kind of simultaneously OPEC's bringing more barrels. Really, just that grade of crude is already kind of the supply is increasing a little bit, and so you're seeing a little bit more kind of downward pressure on that front. The biggest question is whether the Venezuelan oil industry will actually grow over the next couple years, but in my opinion, that's something that's just way long term.
Yeah,
there's a lot up in the air.
There's so much up in the air. I mean, I think it's important to. I do think that one thing that we've seen, just in the very short term, here is that Rodriguez has been a little bit more compliant with the Trump administration than what Maduro was. I think that's like almost the only thing I've really noticed as a change, like on the short term, that we can kind of analyze and kind of give a quick answer to. And then not only that, but today is January 8th, and we've seen the market just completely catapult about $2 a barrel today and on WTI. And I think that Democrats are pushing back on Trump administration, basically facilitating those Venezuelan barrels. So that's, what is your outlook? I know you've done a lot more research than I have been able to so far. What's kind of the reasoning, I guess, for this $2 jump?
I think there's a lot of kind of technical pressure downward prior to today. And we are finally kind of just hitting those levels to where we were hitting some kind of oversold conditions. I know some economic data today, productivity gains increased quite a bit recently, that outperformed expectations. So I think perhaps the one would be just oversold conditions and leading to kind of an economic surprise to the upside, kind of helped catapult that that market a little bit. But it is a pretty strong move, especially on refined product side. We saw
like production with that production stat. You're just saying that's not crude production. That's PMI.
No production, just actual economic production. Yep. So not anything.
Polish,
yes. So the economy has become more efficient according to that economic stat. And really it just goes to like what expectations were and what we saw there. So I think that's one of those headlines that just can kind of start some momentum to one side, and that probably helped move it higher. But truly on the ground and with regards to kind of fundamentals, we're not really seeing anything change in the very near term. I think expectations are still for a very oversupplied market in Q1 of 2026. And the outlooks thus far are very bearish across the board. But, I mean, we're sitting at $57, $58 WTI.
Yeah. We kind of wrote a lot about this in the brief, our morning brief daily. And it's kind of this tug of war match between what the fundamental outlook is, which is clearly, surplus in production. There's no doubt about that. But there is so many geopolitical risks right now that are on the table. Venezuela is catching a lot of the attention right now, but there's a lot of other stuff in the background as well. I mean, Russia's got an ongoing issue. And, there's been peace attempts between the two on the Trump administration side. And really what those kind of quickly vanished because it seemed like they were gaining some ground. I don't know if it was last week or the week before, but Putin claimed that Ukraine was attacking him or like basically doing an assassination attempt on him in Moscow. So that kind of went away fast.
Yeah.
The peace talks did. And then not only that, but we've also seen Iran is having all kinds of domestic issues. I think their Ayatollah is he's leaving, going to Moscow. Or getting kicked out. I don't know if leaving is the right word, but a lot of action on that side of it as well. So those are obviously all sanctioned nations that we're all talking. We're talking about those three there. There's a few other conflicts as well going on, but there's just a lot of stuff going on right now that are kind of creating that tug of war match between on crude oil right now with the fundamental, really grim outlook as far as the surplus goes. And then, all these like, risk of big producers in the world that are having issues that could kind of slow their exports down quite a bit.
Yeah, I think one of the recent so we recently analyzed the export flows from November to December, and one of the big drops was coming out of Russia in on the crude oil side. So I know it's kind of faded off into the background, the whole Ukrainian drone attacks on Russia. But I mean, that's something that could tick back up. There was a massive drop in crude oil loadings from November to December. And that was after Ukraine had attacked some ports in Russia as well. So I think the capabilities of those Ukrainian drones have grown, and you can see their kind of shift in their strategy. And this was kind of, fall, late fall, early winter. It's kind of faded in the background. But they've been targeting refineries, and then they kind of shifted towards like export terminals, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So that's, again, one of those supplies that could be at risk if that's, if there's no progress being made between Russia and Ukraine. And to me, it seems like that peace negotiations are not really going very well, or that they're, it's not like they're going to come to an agreement anytime soon. So I think that's a risk that you have to kind of weigh in there. But overall, we saw inventories are kind of continuing this trend too. So this is another kind of headwind that the market's been facing, is we're seeing crude oil drawing down, but really it's the refineries are ramping up these. They're coming back from turnarounds at the end of late October, November, and then now are kind of running full bore to fill those refined product gaps. And you're seeing the rates, the building rates kind of accelerate right now. So we saw mass builds in gasoline and diesel. Diesel overall is still at kind of a deficit to the five-year seasonal average, but we've kind of talked about this quite a bit, is that that's something that's kind of a structural issue. But right now, where the trend lies is that it appears it's kind of going down, where diesel prices on diesel have been kind of moving lower until today. But, you know, we are flirting with just $2.
Yeah.
And just comparing that to 2 months ago is kind of crazy.
Yeah. I think another thing, too, is just like we talked about how the crack spread, if the crack spread gets blown out significantly, you might kind of, well, I guess coming out in November, we were talking, wait a little bit before you really decide to lock in diesel cost until the crack spread itself, which is those, the diesel margins for refineries. We wanted that to fall down quite a bit before we were telling guys to start buying. And at this point, it's kind of back to our spot where it's not crazy to go look at locking in diesel costs for 26 now. Now, whether or not, now it's a matter of crude. You know, and it's just kind of stay focused on that, unless something crazy happens on the diesel side. But we're back to earth on the margins for diesel for refineries. So, you know, now it's a matter of finding that sweet spot for what you think is a good value for crude oil. And there's been that really strong support level at $55 a barrel. And it's going to be really hard for WTI to break below that until there's, you know, a lot of these geopolitical risks kind of either calm down or we fall at the wayside to some degree. And then the fundamental picture, the surplus that is actually there, really kind of takes hold of the market and drops us below that level, because it's just been there for how many months now, you know, and it's we bounced off it four or five times now.
Yeah.
Over a long, but if you look at the longer term chart, you can really see that. So, you know, we'll have to see if that even happens this year. That it'll be interesting. I still think Q1, maybe early Q2, we'll see the low of 2026. But again, if these geopolitical risks continue, then it's going to be hard for it to, you know, find that low.
Yeah, I think that's the big question, is that all these, you know, data agencies, the ones that provide these forecasts for WTI, and then obviously, you know, every bank, everybody puts out their own price forecast as well. Everybody's kind of on the same side of things. So they're expecting this massive surplus. And then the question will be, are we actually seeing exactly what was forecasted? If not, are things tighter? Are things looser than what we've seen? So honestly, when analyzing our, so what we do on kind of a week-to-week basis, we look at global inventories that are more of the high frequency base. So that's Singapore, Amsterdam, Rotterdam, Antwerp, the European inventories, and then the US inventories as well. And we kind of combine all of these and compare that to what global inventories are expected to be from a global perspective, as opposed to just those, you know, week to week basis. And we have a model that basically says, okay, are we seeing that surplus? Are we seeing a deficit? And we compare kind of what the EIA's expectations are and to what our model tells us. And our model has continuously been slightly tighter than what the expectations are. And this has been kind of for a long time. So we haven't quite seen that massive surplus expected. It's not been reflected on the inventory side of things, according to our model. So although that kind of deficit to the EIA model has been kind of narrowing. So
yeah,
it's still, the market is loosening for sure, but whether we see it loosen as much as it's expected is kind of the next question.
Yeah, that was my question next. Is it, there is growth, correct? And mm-hmm. inventory is just
yes, not exactly. Fine. It's more just like comparing it to what base level forecasts are. So that's where it's kind of, you know, things are slightly tighter than forecasted, but that doesn't mean that it's a tight market.
Yeah.
You know? So that's kind of one of those signals that could kind of tell you why we haven't seen that massive sell-off. So, I mean, is it actually fundamentally driven? But again, I think I'm with you, is that there's probably more downside risk, especially if we breach that $55 level. We could be set to move quite a bit lower. And one thing at this time of year that's really key is now weather forecasts. And those have all kind of turned warm. But like you said, I think at this time of year, and when you're seeing these prices and all this bearishness, this is actually the time when you need to be like, okay, well, when do we need to buy? When is this low point? Because, you know, is it really, are you ever going to exactly determine when that low point is? You know, probably not. Most of the time, you need to kind of compare it against where historicals have been. Where the risks lie, upside, downside. So we are approaching kind of some more of those levels. Have you started to get kind of more interest on that front? What's kind of the industry kind of take at this point? Especially yeah. with 2026 coming on, I feel like a lot of people are kind of ready to get up and go now since it's a turn of the year.
Yeah, the consumer side, on my, at least from my book, is still seeing, we're quoting a ton. There's guys definitely active in watching this market and wanting to look at pricing. I've probably, you know, done maybe, you know, 10% of what I normally contract for a year so far, which tells me that there's still just not guys that are not quite bought in on where the price is now and thinking that's kind of the low. And I somewhat agree with what kind of that sentiment is. So I think that a lot of the news cycles are still showing for a surplus, and Trump's goal of getting crude back down, getting crude at $50 a barrel. And, you know, that's going to be kind of the headline focus of things. And maybe this Venezuela thing even gave us a little, that sentiment, even more bearishness, because a lot of that kind of the average consumer just looks at that and says, well, we're going to get a lot more oil in the market, which I don't think it's not that simple, of course, but you know, from I do think it's going to start warming up at heating up as far as guys locking in a little bit more. And sometimes that upward, we always talk about this, but that upward movement, like today we've seen a bounce of $2 a barrel, that kind of gets guys a little bit more nervous with the price rallying further, and they just want to go ahead and lock it in and knock it out. I still think, you know, your goal should be to aim for that $55 a barrel. If you see that at WTI, I think that's when guys should be flooding in. But I overall, I think the sentiment is still pretty soft on fixed forwards right now. So, you know, the average consumer right now is not quite ready to go as far as locking in. They don't think this is quite the low of the year.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to step in when everybody's saying that prices are going to go down and down. So, but like you said, it's kind of that's one of those psychological effects of, people like to buy when prices are going up, and that's why prices go up. So
one other thing I wanted to ask you about too, because I know you wrote about this the other day in our morning brief, is that Saudi Arabia flagship price. I think they had a report this week that they dropped it over the weekend. You want to speak on that real quick?
Yeah. So their official selling prices that they offer to Asia tends to be a good gauge of where, they believe Asian demand is at. So a lot of the times the Saudis, because they're major buyers of Middle Eastern oil, is, you know, Asia. When you see those prices decline, that kind of leads to the it kind of leads you to believe that you're seeing weaker Asian demand. So that I believe that was the third consecutive month that they've declined this price. And so that tells me that when they're bringing on these barrels, they're still expecting kind of demand to be sought. So until you start seeing those prices either stabilize or turn the corner, that tells you, or in my mind, it tells you that demand on out of Asia is still kind of lagging. Mm-hmm. And I would say one thing, up ahead in late January, February, where we will start to see kind of more of a upside risk potential is if we see any huge cold fronts move in. So this year, originally January was supposed to be colder than normal. And thus far, and I don't know about where everybody else is, but it was 65 degrees in Kansas City on January 7th.
Yeah. And so in Europe and Asia are both warmer than the average too. So got not really anywhere on the globe right now that I could point to and say we're below average temperatures. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's definitely a little bit bearish as well. Speaking on the Saudi Arabia side with that change of price, we had an OPEC meeting over the weekend as well,
It was this past weekend. Yeah, so
not this last
kind weekend. Of overshadowed by Venezuelan.
Absolutely. It completely fell by the wayside. But they did a pause. So not breaking news by any means. That was expected. But it is a little bit of a, it shows a little bit of their hand to some degree that they're kind of comfortable where the price is now, you know, or where demand and supply meet each other. They're fairly comfortable with that. And then that on top of what then Saudi Arabia changing their, lowering their flagship price, that's a pretty good indication that, you know, there's a somewhat of a floor on this market. I don't think that's necessarily like a, I don't think it falls another 10, 15 bucks a barrel is kind of what I'm looking at there. Just from OPEC's move of pausing their production increases, as well as change in Saudi Arabia, lowering their price. And what I've noticed too is China's, they're going to get aggressive when the price gets below 55 bucks a barrel on WTI and inside of 60 on Brent. So, I mean, they're going to start really refilling those SPRs. US might step in and try to do the same. So that's another layer of floor that we could, you know, point to if we get, you know, in that $50 range on crude.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's not to, that's not to say that prices can't go that low, but I think it's just whether that's going to be a sustained price level or not. But I totally agree there. The OPEC meeting kind of did fade into the background, but it did. They paused there. They had been bringing about 180,000 barrels per day or 150,000 barrels per day per each month and had put those on pause in January. That was kind of the plan. And so they came out and said that they're sticking to it. So that will still be an important factor going ahead, whether they make a unilateral cut to save prices, if China steps in and fills their SPR, if you start seeing production declines in the U.S., those are all kind of factors that you're seeing supportive floor pricing, but I don't think we're quite there yet.
No, I definitely think that it's got to break that 55 bucks a barrel level before China gets super aggressive on filling the SPR, and that's really the most bullish thing for me. We do break below there just because they've done that historically,
yeah,
you know, time and time again. So,
the most bullish thing is prices moving down.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they look at it as a bargain.
Yep. So do we, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Now take advantage of it. If like I said, I mean, if we get to below that level, I mean, I really do think that could be the low for the 2026. You might not guess if exactly right, guys. That's just how it goes, but you're certainly taking a lot of risk off the table, considering it's every single week it seems like something new on the geopolitical theater that's could spark another rally in crude. So yeah, take advantage of it if it shows up.
All right. Well, I think that might be all we have for you all today, and we'll join you next time. And thanks for coming on 2026.
Yep. Happy New Year, everybody. Thank you, guys.
You've been listening to the Focus on Fuels podcast with Trevor McClanahan and Alex Hose, brought to you by StoneX, NASDAQ ticker SNEX, a global Fortune 100 financial services company with a century of commodities risk management experience. Subscribe to Focus on Fuels on your preferred podcasting platform. For insights on managing fuel and energy price volatility, and to sign up for the free StoneX Morning Energy Brief newsletter, email focusonfuels@stonex.com or visit www.stonex.com. Please feel free to rate, review, and share this episode with colleagues. Until next time.